You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, flying solo again this week as usual. Kevin is off again, the big day. His wedding is just literally days away. So if you want to send him good wishes, you can do so on Twitter at Kev Laramie. And I'm sure he'd be very happy to hear best wishes from fellow Formula One fans from around the world. And lots of news to get into tonight. There's been plenty of things going on around in the Formula One world after the French Grand Prix this last weekend. So why don't we just dive into it? It's been another exceptionally long day on my side. It's about 10 p.m. on Wednesday night. I don't know how long I'll be able to stay up because, you know, guys, it's too late in the night for coffee. It's too late to have a Red Bull or anything like that because at some point I want to go to sleep and all the caffeine is going to keep me awake. Anyways, before we get into it, let's just recap quickly the top 10 at the French Grand Prix this last weekend, because it will set up what we're going to talk about over the coming minutes and, well, maybe not hours, but over the next hour at any rate. Anyways, Lewis Hamilton winning again in France this past weekend on the what's been a very dominant season for him so far. He was 18 seconds ahead of his teammate Valtteri Bottas. He was literally in a class of his own. When you're that far ahead of your teammate on a track that is supposedly suited to his style, you're in a class of your own. Lewis even was throwing it down right at the end, ignoring team orders not to go for the fastest lap, but he did it anyways. Then behind Valtteri in third was Charles Leclerc and the Ferrari, Max Verstappen for Red Bull, Sebastian Vettel and the second Ferrari, recovering a couple of places. Obviously a very disappointing qualifying for Sebastian, missed an upshift, having some problems with the car and was only able to qualify seventh. So getting a couple of spots back at the end of the race was basically all you could really hope for. And over the past couple of years, since we've returned to racing in at the French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard, hasn't really been a very successful place for Vettel. Last year, of course, had that opening lap coming together with Valtteri Bottas that dropped them all the way back down to the bottom. And Vettel did manage to recover, did better than Bottas did in that race. But, you know, certainly once you get past all those other cars that are slower than you, once it's only Red Bulls, Ferraris, and Mercedes in front of you, it's very, very difficult to close the gap. So well done to Sebastian for getting a couple of points. And then the first of the McLarens, which was an extremely impressive weekend for McLaren. Carlos Sainz coming home in sixth. Seventh was Kimi Raikkonen in the Alfa Romeo. Very good to see Kimi up in the top 10 again. Nico Hülkenberg in 8th position for the Renault. Lando Norris in 9th position. What a fantastic and impressive weekend and race for Lando. Unfortunately, had that late problem with the hydraulics in the car, dropped him down to 9th, but fortunately he was able to hang on and not drop down as far as he could. And then rounding out the top 10 is Pierre Gasly in his home Grand Prix for Red Bull. And that was a bit of and disappointing when you see the difference between Max Verstappen and his teammate Pierre Gasly, a lap down. Not really a great, great result for Gasly. At least he brought it home in the points. Anyways, we will talk about that. And let's, while we're doing that, on the subject of recapping what's going on in Formula One, let's just now take a quick look at the Drivers and Constructors Championships. Lewis is pulling away in the World Championship on the driver's side with 187 points. Valtteri Bottas, second with 151. Vettel in third with 111 points. Max Verstappen happen. Still in touch to maybe make a run at finishing the top three this year in the Drivers' Championship with 100 points. And Charles Leclerc rounding out to the top five with 87 points. A full 50 points ahead of his teammate Pierre Gasly, who has only recorded 37 points thus far. And it really, again, is... Well, like we've been talking about for several races now, it's not going to be which team and which driver is going to win the Constructors or the Drivers World Championship. Obviously, unless something bizarrely weird happens, it's going to be another Mercedes year again, and it's going to be a question of whether or not it's going to be Lewis Hamilton or Valtteri Bottas winning the Drivers Championship this year. And honestly, if Lewis is going to put in performances like we saw on Sunday at Paul Ricard, is even Valtteri Bottas going to be able to make a legitimate challenge for a world championship and be the spoiler and prevent Lewis from recording his sixth world championship? And at this point, I really, really doubt it. And I mean, I'm not going to throw shade at Valtteri Bottas or criticize him in any ways. I think that he's come back very, very well after what was a very difficult and disappointing 2018. But Lewis is just in a class of his own at the moment and really, really looks motivated and doesn't look like he's putting a foot wrong, and it would take something special from Valtteri Bottas to really make a serious run at the World Championship. But hey, we're going to Austria this weekend, and Bottas has done very well there over the past couple of years, and was I would argue was robbed of what looked to be another promising outing last year when they had the double DNF. Mercedes did, both cars did not finish, which was like the first time since the 1950s, if I remember correctly. But anyways, the point is Valtteri Bottas goes very well at the Red Bull Ring, and I would expect to see similar from him this weekend. And if he's trying to look to kickstart his championship challenge against his teammates, then this would be the weekend to do it. But now let's look at the constructor standings. Obviously, it's going to be Mercedes. I can't see, even this early in the season. I know we're not even at the halfway point yet. The summer break is still just about a month away. We still have to go to Austria. We still have to go to Germany. We still have to go to Great Britain. Obviously, in a little bit of a different order there. But anyways, still several races left before the summer break. But already, it is Mercedes miles ahead in the constructors' standings with 338 points. Ferrari in second with 198. And even that's quite a bit ahead of Red Bull, who are currently at 137 points, which is good enough for third in the constructors' championship. So, well, why don't we just go and just start on the subject of Lewis Hamilton. And his team principal, Toto Wolff, says that Hamilton may be the best driver that has ever existed. And, well, I guess there is a very, very good argument to be made for that. I mean, obviously, Lewis is the best driver of this generation, certainly. When you see some of the drives that we've seen him put in the past couple of races alone, I mean, look at that wonderful job that he did to win in Monaco, despite struggling with the tires of fading and keeping Max Verstappen, of all people, at bay for so many laps when his team, they messed up. They obviously went with the wrong tires, and Lewis paid for it, but fortunately he just had enough grip, which gave him enough speed to go through the tunnel there and just keep Max Verstappen at arm's length. But still, Max had a lunge at one point going into the chicane there. It almost came to tears, but fortunately for neither driver it did. But Lewis certainly rescued his team there, and it was exciting. It was fun to watch, because you kept thinking, well, is Lewis going to be able to hang on there? Is Max going to make that long expected overtaking maneuver? And we all know that you leave even a sniff, a hint of an opportunity, and Max is going to go for it. But Lewis certainly was very impressive in that win. And just this past weekend in France, just dominant, absolutely dominant. And it is interesting just to see what Toto Wolff was talking about. I mean, certainly from a statistics point of view, Lewis is at the top of the chart in so many different categories. I mean, he's slowly closing in on the 91 career victories that is currently owned by, or that record is owned by Michael Schumacher. And of course, Schumi is the one that is still on top with seven world championships. But I was thinking last year, after five, I was thinking to myself over the winter, how long is Lewis going to stay motivated to do this? Obviously, he doesn't need the money. Not that money is his sole purpose for being in Formula One. But the point is that away from Formula One, he has you know, lots of different interests. Obviously, the fashion thing is that that he's very into, and he does his own thing. He marches to the beat of his own drum. He lives his own life away from Formula One. And my question wasn't so much from a motivation point of view, and I've never really had that doubt with Lewis Hamilton. That when he shows up, I always get the feeling that he's 100% committed. I mean, he's had a couple of off races now and again, but who doesn't? I mean, even the best have bad days at the office, and Lewis Hamilton is no exception. But my question wasn't so much, like I say, the motivation point. Is he going to stay motivated to stay in Formula One? But after 5 world championships, I thought to myself, well, you know, that's a nice round number. He's, I mean, he's in the prime of his career. I mean, he can certainly race for a number of years yet, but my question was, is he still interested to do so? Or has he gotten to the point where he already owns all these records and he's got plenty of different interests away from the sport? Would he want to keep doing that? Or do you want to turn that determination and that focus and the passion that he has for things into other areas of his life? So that remains to be seen, because he is under contract for another year. And he's been saying for quite a while now that that one of the things that will determine whether or not he comes back to sign another contract in Formula One is how things are going to look for 2021 and beyond. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But it is you know, quite interesting to hear his boss, Toto Wolff at Mercedes, saying that he doesn't think that Lewis, especially in the United Kingdom, is recognized in the way that he should be. And I mean, I can't really speak to that. Being in North America, being in Canada, we don't really get a lot of coverage on the front pages of Formula One. I mean, it's really buried there. I mean, obviously, like you, for many of you that are fans of Formula One and follow the sport closely, I go looking for that news. But if I go into a store or go online, and it doesn't immediately pop up very, very obviously, even if I go into a bookstore or something, look at all the magazines, the Formula One ones are always kind of tucked away in a bit of a corner in a not very obvious place. So maybe that is true. I can't really speak to that, but it was interesting. I remember, I think Lewis may have been on the Ellen DeGeneres show here in America. I think it was about maybe a year, 2 years ago. And my wife made an interesting comment at the time. We're both big Formula One fans, obviously. And she said that Lewis seems to be known in America. And she said, and she wondered why that was. And we came to the conclusion, maybe he's well known in the States just because he's famous. He's almost famous for being famous. Some people really might know him just because he's a famous racing driver, maybe Formula One driver, maybe the glamour and the prestige associated with that. But obviously, I don't think he's maybe recognized from the sporting side as maybe he would be in other parts of the world, specifically in Europe, in the United Kingdom, where he is a bigger celebrity, whatever you want to call it, on the sporting side, because obviously that's what he's known for. But you know, I think there is a really, really legitimate claim to what Toto Wolff says. And over the space of a lap, there is nobody quicker, because it is just, it continues to amaze me just how quick the guy is. And it really is fascinating to watch during the course of a Grand Prix when it comes close to pit stop time, how when Lewis needs to push and it's hammer time, he just keeps setting those fast laps one after another, just to build up enough space to give himself the best opportunity that when he goes in for his pit stop, that he's going to have as much space between himself and whoever's behind him. So, I mean, just from a consistency point of view, I mean, it's one thing to be good, but I mean, it's a completely another thing to be so good for so long, and not just for so long, but from weekend to weekend to weekend. The guy is a machine, and it is really, really impressive. But I guess we could go on for about that, and I'm not here to gush and about Lewis Hamilton, how wonderful he is. I mean, he is. He's obviously an amazing racing driver, but I'll throw that out to you. Do you guys think that Lewis Hamilton gets the recognition that that he deserves? If you're in the UK, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a tweet at ScuderiaF1Pod on the Twitters, or send me an email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. Is Lewis recognized properly, and is he one of the best? Well, obviously he's one of the best, but do you think he's the best one ever? Love to hear from you. Anyways, let's move on now. Let's talk about what I think was another great story for the French Grand Prix this weekend. And that was the story of McLaren. And we've talked about this on the show several times over the years, that that this year they have made a small incremental steps forward each and every week. But this past weekend with the upgrades that they brought and everything like that, I thought that they looked really, really great. And certainly both of them making it into the top 10, starting the Grand Prix where they did, Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris, really wonderful to see. I mean, it really is a good story because it was really sad to see how that team had really lost way over their way over the past several years, and especially at the real low points in the when Stoffel Vandoorne and Alonso were there 2 years ago, when it was just really everything had bottomed out. Everything was looking so bad with what was happening with the Honda engines and the reliability, and they were just completely at the bottom. There was just not a nice thing to see. I mean, especially a team that has had so much success in Formula One, and that just doesn't automatically guarantee, because you've been good in the past, that you deserve to be up at the top. I mean, Formula One, it is dog eat dog. It's a shark tank. I mean, use whatever metaphor or analogy you want to, and if you aren't on top, if you don't have the right people there, or maybe if you have the right people but you're not utilizing them in the right place, then well, things are going to go bad. And certainly they have done. And I was a little bit skeptical last year, to be quite honest, when I saw that they were going to go with Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris for this year. I mean, Sainz is a decent driver, don't get me wrong, but I had my questions whether or not he would be the guy to lead McLaren. I mean, he'd been at Renault, he'd been at Toro Rosso. I mean, he'd been with some okay teams before, but McLaren, my question was, would he be the guy to really help lead the way and really do the job that that they needed to get back where they needed to? So they've done a good job, and Lando Norris has been, I think, very, very good in his rookie year in Formula One. I mean, honestly, I knew the name, but I didn't really follow him in his career prior to Formula One. I know what his accomplishments were, and again, it's a big question as to whether or not when a driver steps up to Formula One, are they going to be able to get the job done? But he's done a really, really good job so far. But I mean, fifth and sixth, third on the row or third row of the starting grid. With only Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, Valtteri Bottas, and Lewis Hamilton in front of you. Very, very impressive stuff. And certainly when you saw the problem that Lando Norris had late in the race with the hydraulic problems, and the way that he was able to hang on really by the skin of his teeth with in the dying laps of the race, and the car getting a little bit away from him, was really, really impressive. Anyways, I'm going to take a short time out here for a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about McLaren and their great weekend in France, and we're going to talk about Renault as well, which was a bit of a interesting weekend for them in their home Grand Prix. Anyways, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1. The podcast is always up to speed with Formula One racing here on the Overtime Media Network. And yeah, let's just finish up what we were talking about before the break, just regarding Lando Norris in what was termed a very impressive French Grand Prix. I mean, he did really hang on there. It looked like he was going to take a seventh place, but right at the very end, when he started losing hydraulic power with about 20 laps to go, and this really affected a number of different systems in the car, including DRS, the brake, differentials, power steering, and then slowly he fell victim to the cars behind him. He was going to end up in 10th, and but that was elevated to 9th because Danny Ricciardo was handed a penalty for some last lap shenanigans. But new McLaren team boss Andreas Seidel said that there were serious concerns about the hydraulic issue that could stop Norris, and it got a little bit crazy there. They were saying in both the cockpit and the garage, and the engineers were just trying to really push Lando to keep going and just fight through it. And it must have been really, really tough. I mean, to take away all these things that make the car work and basically have to do it manually is certainly a very difficult thing. And he did a very good job for a very, very long time. And there just wasn't very much left in the car at that point. And there was a lineup of cars behind them or behind Norris. And he lost several places in very short order. But it was good to see. And like I say, it is nice to see that McLaren is starting to make their way back up, because they're not fighting for podiums yet, but if they can keep this up, and this will be a big question or a big talking point again this week in Austria, is was this a flash in the pan for McLaren? Was the Circuit Paul Ricard just a place that is just suited to them? We'll wait and see. Those questions will be answered in due course, and it will be interesting to see whether or not they can keep it up. But on the flip side, on the Renault side, and of course there's a tie-in with McLaren here, because of course they have the Renault power as well. Cyril Abiteboul, the team principal at Renault, says that they believe that they are just as fast as McLaren, despite losing out and not finishing quite as high up in the order. Of course, Nico Hülkenberg came home in 8th, and then Danny Ricciardo eventually finished outside of the points in 13, and that was mostly because of all the different things that were going on late in the race there, going off the exceeding track limits and some of the other shenanigans there. But anyways, they believe that they're getting close, and they have made a number of upgrades to their car over the past several races, and just also to the aerodynamics and not just the engine, but it really hasn't quite been there. And they have been saying that the car hasn't really the circumstances haven't been quite right, I think, is the way that Nico Hülkenberg tried to kind of describe it a couple of weeks ago. And certainly we did see a little bit more from them this week, or this past weekend in France. And when you look at them, you had Danny Ricciardo that started the race in 8th, and Nico Hülkenberg in 13th, which was a bit of an issue that he had in Q2. But still, I mean, to make it all the way up to 8th by the end of the race for Hülkenberg was, I think, a decent result for them. And certainly we need to see more from Renault. We need to see whether or not they're actually starting to put this thing together, because they have plateaued to a certain extent over the past couple of years. And I think this year and next year are really crucial for Renault in Formula One, because I think this is at the point in the development and the stage of this program, whatever you want to call it, where we should see some legitimate or some, I think, some real concrete gains that they are slowly starting to pull away from the teams in the midfield, because this is a team that has done very well in Formula One in the past as a constructor, as an engine manufacturer. I mean, they have won championships. I mean, Fernando Alonso won both his world championships as a Renault driver way back in 2005 and 2006. Okay, that's a while ago now, but still, the point is that they've done it before, and the question is, will they be able to do it again? And they do have a good pair of drivers in them, Danny Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, Hülkenberg has not really had the success in Formula One that a lot of people have expected. I mean, I think he holds the record now for the longest run in Formula One without a podium, but he did win at Le Mans a couple of years ago, and And that is no small feat to be a race winner there in endurance racing, and especially at Le Mans. I mean, that is one of the big races in the all of motorsports. So, I mean, the guy's got talent, but for whatever reason, it just has never really translated to success in Formula One. And he's, very much like Ricardo, in a position where they're kind of hedging their bets on the future, that they've hitched their horse to the right train, whatever you want to call it. That this is a team that maybe you got to grin and bear it for a year or two, or whatever the case may be, before the real success and the real gains in performance and success on the track and in racing is really going to start to manifest itself. And certainly at this point in the season thus far, you look at Danny Ricciardo, who has had a couple or several very good years at Red Bull, won his first Grand Prix there. It was the first of quite a few and quite a number of podiums, and has really made a name for himself in Formula One. Is Daniel Ricciardo, though, a potential world champion? I don't know. That is a great question. I mean, he's without a doubt a very, very good driver, a very, very good Formula One driver, and should be racing in Formula One. I mean, he deserves to be there without a doubt, 100%. However, it was interesting, I think, that when it came down to the crunch this time last year, when it was all negotiation with Red Bull about resigning and staying there, or deciding to move on, because it was a surprise that he decided to go to Renault. And I still remember it vividly when the announcement came. I was on vacation myself, and I just happened to be waiting for everybody to come out of the hotel, and I was just sitting outside the hotel entrance on a bench in a little park there, just going through Twitter on my phone when I saw the little video that Ricardo had posted. And like many of you, I was shocked that he decided to leave Red Bull. But I think at the end of the day that he knew that, whether it was explicitly stated or not, that Red Bull was Max Verstappen's team. And Max, I think, has really made the case that he is a potential world champion in Formula One. I mean, he is certainly an exciting driver to watch. I mean, there's been a bit of controversy around him over the past couple of years. But I mean, the thing is with Max, I mean, he's a hard charging, aggressive driver, and he's quick. And there's no doubt that he has a lot of the qualities that a world champion needs. The only thing now is that he needs a car that can help him challenge for a world championship. And that's why it's going to be fun to watch over the next couple of years as Max comes into his prime and the partnership between Honda and Red Bull continues to grow, and hopefully from their point of view at least continues to flourish. And certainly they've done very well so far in their first season together. There seems to be a lot of synergy between two of them. But anyways, the point is, it became obvious that Ricardo, or at least in retrospect, that he didn't want to stick there, that he was looking for something else. And Renault seemed like a smart, well, maybe not a smart move, but you could see where the logic was in him going there. Obviously, he may have felt a bit of second fiddle to Max at Red Bull, whether or not they publicly came out and said that Max was going to be number one, Ricardo was number two, or kind of 1A and 1B in terms of ranking there, whatever you want to call it. Where at Renault, he kind of has the opportunity to be more, or have the opportunity that he could be the potential number one there. And I don't really know if there is an explicitly named number one at Renault. I mean, I think that both Hülkenberg and Ricciardo are both good drivers, and Ricciardo certainly has had success in Formula One over the past several years, obviously. But it makes you wonder if Nico Hülkenberg had been at Red Bull, say instead of Force India or Renault, would he have had similar success as Danny Ricciardo, or would he have done better? Of course, that's all speculation. We'll never really know. But still, I think that it is a solid pairing there. And Renault, I think, really needs to start fighting, start moving forward. And whether or not they're there, and they say they're as fast as McLaren. That's another question, because it's interesting now, because you have the team principal, Abitbol, saying that they are. Then you have Ricciardo, on the other hand, saying that that's the one thing that really affected them at the French Grand Prix last weekend was they didn't get the setup right, and it was the new surface that on the track there that really hindered them and really stopped them from maximizing the upgrade. So now the question about Renault at this point in time is, where are they with the car? Is the car good enough? Is the engine good enough? Are the upgrades good enough? Or is it a little bit of propaganda and PR on their behalf saying, oh yeah, well, you know, no, there's nothing wrong with the car. The car is good, you know, but we just didn't set it up right. So that's what it becomes now, the discussion. Is the car good enough? Or if it isn't good enough, why? Or is it just a setup thing? Which seems a bit interesting that you know, that they kind of blew it on what or didn't make the most of what looked to be a very sort of promising, and almost, well, I don't know if you want to call it a coming out party, but, you know, you obviously want to do good in front of the home fans. And obviously Renault being a French manufacturer at the French Grand Prix, you're going to want to go and do good. So, you know, an eighth place for Nico Hülkenberg, it's all right. I mean, it's better than what they've had over the past, I guess for most of the season so far. I mean, the results have been a little bit, I wouldn't say disappointing, but I think they've left them wanting more. I mean, they're still kind of the best of the rest if you want to call it, maybe in that second class B. I mean, you have Mercedes, who are in a class of their own. Ferrari and Red Bull are obviously racing each other in the moment. And then you have everybody else. And Renault, at the end of last year in 2018, they're the ones that finished fourth in the Constructors' Championship. So obviously last year they were the best of the rest of the rest. But this year, and especially over the past couple of races, well, as we were talking about just now, McLaren are starting to make noise, and things are obviously getting sorted out there. And the people that have been brought in over the past couple of years are starting to make a difference. And they got the new team principal, Andreas Seidel, who's been there for a couple of races now. And like I was saying a couple of minutes ago, to see them on the third row of the grid, and convincingly so, is a very, very good achievement for them. You could just see how happy they were on the pit wall during qualifying at the end of Q3, just how pumped they were. So it really gives them reinforcement that whatever they're doing is working, and it's just going to motivate them to keep going forward. So Renault are going to have to do the same thing, because if you are the works team, and Renault obviously are one of the few teams in Formula One that are manufacturing both a car and an engine and putting it together. I mean, Ferrari are doing it, Mercedes are doing it, and Renault are doing it. And they're miles behind Ferrari, and they're even further behind Mercedes. But the thing is, they don't want to be behind McLaren. They don't want their customer team to be ahead of them on the track. And I think that's going to be something that the bosses, the brass at Renault, are going to be looking down at the Formula One team if that continues to be so. It's like, why are we investing so much money? What are we doing wrong? Why is our customer team outperforming us and beating us straight up on the track? But it's interesting too. I mean, McLaren on the other hand said that they felt no relief that Renault didn't make that big step at the French Grand Prix after they introduced their big update package. And they really were, or Renault that is, were hoping that that package was going to lift them out of the midfield. So it worked for one team, it didn't work for the other. So it'll be interesting to see what unfolds with both McLaren and Renault this week in Austria. Anyways, it's time now for another quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. We're going to keep talking about McLaren and Renault just for a little bit longer. We'll talk a little bit about the Austrian Grand Prix. We're going to talk about the post-2021 rules and how Lewis Hamilton said that the proposed changes are just not good enough. That and lots more after the break. So please don't go away. We will be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the show. And just sticking with McLaren for a little bit longer, they feel like they're in a bit of a dilemma now with the engine upgrades. And Carlos Sainz has already used his quota of 3 power units, his team, and Lando Norris is getting there a little bit as well in the quota that he has. And they did have the opportunity this past weekend in France to go with the new B-Spec engine, but they've decided to wait out. And Andreas Seidel said that it's something that they're working out at the moment. They want to look at the data again after France, and then they're going to work out a plan and see what they're going to do, because especially later in the year, they're going to want to have to avoid the grid penalties. We saw this past weekend, Danny Kvyat took a new Honda power unit for his car. He ended up all the way at the back of the grid. So, you know, there are a lot of considerations that you need to take into account. I mean, that's one of the cost-cutting measures that they have in Formula One. Certainly, they don't want to have teams burning through engines more than they need to. And, you know, I mean, Kvyat did pretty good. I mean, he started, like I say, at the back of the grid. He made it as high up as 14th, which was one place ahead of his teammate, Alexander Albon. Not a great weekend in terms of results for Toro Rosso, but Kvyat, I think, at least will be... I think quite pleased that he was able to get as far up as he did. And I mean, he didn't make it into the points, but certainly he was able to carve his way through the order to a certain extent. And well, he did end up behind the two racing point Mercedes cars. And well, not quite good enough, but certainly it was okay for them. Anyways, just talking a little bit more about the French Grand Prix. And Danny Ricciardo reckons that Paul Ricard, the operator of the track there, should consider a different layout for Formula One. And well, let's be fair. It was not a very exciting Grand Prix. I mean, we saw some of those. We did see a number of overtaking going on in that chicane down sort of about two-thirds of the way around the Mistral Strait on the back of the track there. But it wasn't really an exciting race. I mean, when you see the top three, you have Lewis Hamilton 18 seconds in front of his teammate in second, who's about the same thing again, 18 or 19 seconds ahead of Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. And then there's even a bigger gap back to Max Verstappen in fourth. It's disappointing, and nobody really wants to see that. I mean, there were some exciting scraps in the midfield, but let's be honest, as fun as it is to watch, nobody really cares what the battle for 14th position is, right? I mean, I don't think I'm alone in saying that I would love to see Valtteri Bottas and Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton and whoever else scrapping it back back and forth all race long and see numerous changes in the lead. And it doesn't just come down to, okay, Hamilton was out in front, but you know, he drops down to fourth position because of the pit stop. And then by the time that Bottas goes in and Verstappen and Vettel and whoever else, by the time it's all done, it just reverts back to the same running order that we had prior to the pit stops. Nobody wants to see that either. We want to see good, hard, honest, clean racing and fun racing. That's as race fans, as Formula One fans, that's what we all want to see, right? And I sometimes get a little bit critical and I get a little bit bored. I'll be completely honest and transparent here. I find Lewis Hamilton winning all the time a little bit boring. And that's no disrespect meant to Lewis. I mean, as I was saying at the top of the show, I got nothing respect for the guy. I mean, what he's done and consistently done for so many years is absolutely outstanding. However, it does become a little bit predictable. And, you know, I mean, if he was still to scrap it out with Vettel or Bottas or Charles Leclerc, whoever, and still wins, yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, if you're winning anyways because you're the best, I mean, that's fine. But I mean, the thing is, it has become predictable, and I think like everybody else, I just want to see more going on, and I want to see more battles on the track. But one thing, at least for the French Grand Prix, Danny Ricciardo believes that they can actually do more at Paul Ricciardo. Because if you look at the overhead, the aerial photo of the circuit, and just go on to Google Maps or whatever and go check it out for yourself, there are almost, I don't know how many different combinations. I wouldn't say infinite. That's obviously quite an exaggeration, but there are many, many different configurations that they can use to the track there. And it's really kind of interesting because they do have that those different bands of the colored abrasive paint that's around the exterior of the track, the blue and the white and the blue and the red, which have different degrees of abrasiveness. But if you look in between those, especially from above, you'll see the different options that they have for configurations on the track. I mean, I think that the Mistral Straight is really cool. I mean, you just see the speed and the power of the Formula One cars as they go down there, but I think there's something to this, what Ricciardo was saying. If there is a way that they can maximize and make use of the potential of Paul Ricciard to make it more exciting, to make it more fun, because it is kind of interesting the way it is. I mean, like I say, you got the long Mistral straight with the chicane at the back, and then you kind of have a couple of tight, twisty technical sections at either end of it. And even just after the start finish, you have a bit of a series of long sweeping corners. So for me, it's a cool track, but could it be made better? Possibly. So I think that should be something that that they should look at. And I think that it could be something, an area of potential that they should look into. I do want to talk a little bit more about just the rules and what's going to go on in 2021 and beyond. But before that, of course, I just wanted to talk quickly because I've kind of skipped over it a little bit in my enthusiasm here, just talking about all the news. But just to clarify, Danny Ricciardo, just sticking with him for a couple of moments longer. So he would have finished in seventh in France last weekend, but he was dropped down to 11th in the final results because he got two separate penalties right on the last lap. Like I was saying, it was some shenanigans. And because of that, Raikkonen moved up to seventh, Lando North, and it was all completely changed around in the end. And I should just double check because it was so crazy in the end. So yeah, it was Raikkonen finished 7, Hulkenberg 8th, Lando North 9th, and Pierre Gasly was 10th. But yeah, I mean, there was quite a lot going on there. So first of all, he was judged to have left the circuit and rejoined unsafely, forcing another driver off of the track. And we keep going on about that because, I mean, of course, that's going to be something that's going to be very much in focus in the moment. I mean, after what happened between Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel in Canada a couple of weeks ago, that is just, it's something everybody's looking at. It's not just the stewards, but what Ricciardo was doing was not, it wasn't the smartest thing. And it was obviously, I think, an easier decision for the stewards to make than what it was for Vettel. I mean, if Vettel was judged to have rejoined the track unsafely, and there was a bit of debate about it, depending on your point of view, I don't think there was any real debate over the incident with Danny Ricciardo on the final lap at Francis this past weekend. So for those and other transgressions, he got the double penalty. So a bit disappointing for him, because I don't think there's ever really been a question that Danny Ricciardo is a dirty driver, or is unfair or not clean. I mean, we all know that he's the master of the late overtake, But a sad way for him to end the race, because certainly that's something that doesn't really look too good on him, and certainly he doesn't have that reputation. So anyways, moving along, let's talk about Ferrari now. We haven't we've been at this now for over 40 minutes, almost three quarters of an hour. We haven't talked about Ferrari very much at all. So they are now willing to sacrifice some of their straight line speed and that advantage into pursuit of a more downforce as they try to evolve the their philosophy on the their car's aerodynamics for this year. And again, they struggled this past weekend and were just not able to close the gap to Mercedes. And they're still on that unbeaten 100% winning start to the season. And it I'm feeling like I've become a broken record. It's just it is so disappointing that that Ferrari has underperformed so badly thus far this season and has had some of it is their own faults. There was the disappointment in Bahrain when Vettel had a bit of a moment and when scrapping with Lewis Hamilton, and then Charles Leclerc had the issue with the engine in his car, which he was lucky that they had the safety car towards the end there, which preserved the podium at least. And then there was the incident in Canada when Vettel lost the lead because of that the 5-second time penalty that was levied against him by the stewards after he had a bit of a wiggle and went onto the grass and was judged to have re-entered or rejoined the track unsafely. But then in the races where they haven't been competitive, they just really haven't been anywhere. I mean, Vettel looked great in Canada. I mean, it was just him and Hamilton, and they were miles ahead of everybody else. I mean, Charles Leclerc was 12 or 15 seconds behind it at one point, closed up a little bit towards there at the end of the race. But Vettel just looked really competitive. He looked like the Vettel that we've been used to over the past couple of years, scrapping it out there with Lewis Hamilton. And it was fun to watch. I mean, it really was that question. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Lewis, or is it going to be Seb that's going to be this one? So, I mean, to see Lewis win it on a technicality, whatever, we've been there. We talked about it at length last week. We don't need to go back there again, but the point is that when they haven't been competitive, I mean, the Ferrari has just been in a class apart from Mercedes, and obviously not in a good way. They've been miles behind, and they just have not been able to generate the enough temperature at times to get into these tires and get them into that real sweet spot in that optimum temperature range where they're going to get all the grip and get those tires working properly. So they did bring several upgrades to Paul Ricard, but again, it was disappointing. They didn't really get what they wanted, and any gains that they had were minimal, at least compared to Mercedes, which of course is the team that everybody's trying to catch at the moment. And well, maybe not in the moment. I mean, it's been the past several years. But what Mattia Bonotto, the team principal at Ferrari, was saying is that that they are looking for more downforce at the expense of speed. And it says even if the car is not as efficient, it will give more downforce to get the tires working. And that's the direction that they're going to go to. And he said again in qualifying last week, and it was just how difficult it was to get the tires working properly. And it's something that they're focused and really trying to get a handle on. And well, I mean, we are at that point already that, I mean, the season, at least in terms of a championship point of view, is basically a write-off for Ferrari, right? I mean, I can't see of any conceivable or realistic situation where Vettel or Leclerc would become right back in the mix to be a contender for the world championship. I mean, that's off the table at this point of view. I think what they have to aim for now is get this season turned around to the point where they're at least competitive and they're back on a level or closer to Mercedes and at least challenging for wins, and then take what they learn in the latter half of this year. If they're able to figure out the problem that they have to get the tires in working properly and figure out what changes that they need to make in their philosophy and with the aerodynamics on the car and take those lessons learned and take it into 2020 and then come back to fight another day. I mean, that's what I think. I think that at this point in time, that's what they need to focus on is try to get back to winning ways this season and then look forward to and look ahead to next year. Because at some point, they're going to have to write it off. Okay, the car is what it is, and it's time to stop development and further development on this car and stop looking towards or start looking towards 2020 and try to come back fighting and winning for next year. Anyways, time for one final break here on the Overtime Media Network, and we're going to start shutting the show down after this. Anyways, you are listening to Scuderia F1, and don't go away. We will be right back.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, guys, welcome back. And as we start to close it down now, we're just going to stick with Ferrari a little bit longer here. And Sebastian Vettel, he was quite frank saying that they failed, Ferrari, that is, in their French Grand Prix objective. And he says that the updates that they introduced to the car didn't substantially reduce the gap to Mercedes in front of them. And they brought revised wings and brake ducts as part of the update package. And well, they were kind of mixed reviews, for particularly from Sebastian Vettel, and he said the team had reverted to most of the changes before qualifying, and the fastest Ferrari in qualifying was Charles Leclerc, and but he was still 6 tenths off of the pace than Mercedes. So I don't know what else to say about Ferrari at the moment, guys. We've kind of been talking about it, and well, we can go back to say that they were the champions of the winter season, and that would be a winter test. But at the end of the day, they just weren't able to take what looked like a really, really promising form in testing and actually bring it into race conditions. And that is the disappointment, because I was really hoping this year to see more fights between the Mercedes and the Ferrari drivers. And so far, it has been far and few between. Anyways, let's talk a little bit now about 2021 and beyond, or just the state of Formula One. And Lewis Hamilton, 5-time world champion, Lewis Hamilton says to blame rule makers and not drivers for boring Formula One races. And yeah, he's bang on. And just for the record, I don't think I've ever really been out and out to say that I think that's a driver's fault that that Formula One or certain races been boring. I mean, I guess we could go back to Monaco last year in 2018, the one that Danny Ricciardo won, despite having a feeling MGUK, which really slowed him down for most of the race. And you had after the race, you had guys like Hamilton and Fernando Alonso saying it was one of the most boring races ever. I think that was pretty much verbatim what Fernando said. But certainly that's true. I mean, it is not the driver's fault. I mean, when you have a track like Monaco and you have a car that's struggling and you're in front there, you're going to do whatever it takes within the limits, within the rules to stay in front. So, I mean, can you really blame Danny Ricciardo for driving a wide car? And, well, I mean, nobody behind him really pushed that hard to really get around him anyways. So I guess the job for him was half done just by his rivals, but certainly it is true. I mean, when it comes down to it, it comes down to the people that decide what Formula One is, and that is the big problem at the moment, right? I mean, we've been talking about this now for the better part of a year, maybe even a little bit longer. When I guess it was even Bahrain last year when Ross Brawn came out with some of the proposals and some of the ideas, some of the things that they were looking at for 2021 and beyond, and everybody was really excited because they had this really, really cool space age looking concept car of what a car in 2021 might look like, and everybody was really excited. And those positive feelings or what are expectations, what even we'll call it, were tempered quite quickly, that because a lot of the team said, well, you know, well, that's what the rules may allow, but in reality, the cars probably won't look a lot different than they are right now. But then it kind of went nowhere for a very long time, and it's kind of really dragged on. And Ross Brawn was saying several months ago that he was frustrated about the glacial speed of negotiations with all the teams and all the different stakeholders, and that just is a bit of a sad reinforcement or realization or reminder that that Formula One can sometimes be its own worst enemy. There's so many vested interests in the sport and so much politics that it isn't easy. And I thought, well, you know, maybe Formula One under the ownership and guidance of Chase Carey and Liberty Media, maybe they just they don't have it. Maybe they're just not the strong man that Formula One needs. And I thought, well, maybe Formula One already had that guy, and that was Bernie Ecclestone. But I mean, Bernie got what Bernie wanted, and there's no question about that. But still, there was, I don't know how successful he really was at the end of the day, how hard he really pushed to make Formula One maybe more exciting for the fans. I mean, certainly, like I say, he got things the way that he wanted, but now we're sort of faced with the same thing again, that's the teams are resistant to a certain extent. And then, you know, you hear comments that, you know, there's quiet or there's room for quiet optimism that things might be going in the right way, in the right direction. And then, you know, you have Lewis talking about the, you know, these boring races. And then, you know, he goes on to even go further, and where he says, quote, that the overhaul are, quote, nowhere near where it needs to be for 2021. And he says it needs a serious changes. And he did attend a meeting that delayed the finalizing of the rules. And it's been the date for the vote or for the finalization for the rules has been pushed back a number of times. Now they're talking about October, and the thing is, it just becomes so difficult. And I really don't know what the best way to do it is. I mean, I'm not on the inside as much as I'd like to be, but you know, be that as it may, I really don't know of another sport where the stakeholders have so much input in a way, and all these vested interests have all how do you want to put it now, the voice that they have. And I mean, in the past, whenever the Concorde Agreement came up for renegotiation, or they started looking at revamping the rules and the regulations and all those sorts of things, that quite often it seemed to be, and of course I'm going to oversimplify here, that whenever there were discussions like that, somebody would get upset, usually Ferrari. They'd threaten to pull out of Formula One. We've heard other teams make that threat as well. And I mean, there really haven't been too many talk about that. I mean, there was talk at one point where Ferrari didn't say that they were going to pull out of Formula One, but they were a little bit concerned about the direction the discussions were taking, and they were basically saying, we'll have to see what direction they want to go in and see if it goes with our values and our ethos and our philosophy, and whether or not that really jives, which is what is the genes, the DNA of Ferrari, if you will. So, you know, I'm encouraged by that to a certain extent, that nobody's decided to take all their toys and go home. But still, I'm like many other people, and a lot of people on the inside that come out and say these things, I'm discouraged that it's and frustrated that it's taking so long. And when I hear somebody like Lewis Hamilton come out and say that the changes that have been proposed so far aren't going far enough, and they have to make really big, major, serious changes to the sport, I think that it's a big cause for concern. And I think that that if you're one of the people that are there, that has a voice or not, I think that that anybody inside Formula One should be concerned when a guy that's basically poster boy, the poster boy for Formula One in the moment, in this era, and a five-time world champion nonetheless, is coming out publicly saying, you know, guys, you know, what you're doing isn't going far enough, and you need to look harder and do something better. So I don't know really where it's going to go, and I certainly hope that they get it right. And I know I've said that over the years, and I would really, I think I have to go back and take a look at races maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and see what the real difference is. I think that over time, perceptions are maybe colored a little bit. And, you know, the memory is a little bit of a funny thing. I mean, you know, sometimes you can misremember things or it isn't quite the same as you remember. So before I really kind of get into it, say, oh yeah, well, racing was much better 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago, I have to go back and really remind myself, because I feel like I've been making the same complaint for a while now, but certainly the number of, let's say, not very exciting races has been a little bit more frequent in the past couple of years. And so far, I think that the changes that they pushed through last year, I mean, have they really worked? Have they really, I guess they have in some circumstances. We're still not maybe getting that, I guess that holy grail of wheel-to-wheel racing and cars passing each other all over the race. Maybe that's just an unrealistic expectation that I have. I mean, I really don't know what the answer is, but like I say, I'm concerned that Lewis is saying that the changes that they're proposing just aren't good enough. But just to add to that, the F1 sporting boss and that he's the or director of motorsport, whatever Ross Brawn's title is, he's looking forward to getting involved, and he says he cannot wait to work with Lewis in shaping the championship's future. And he said now that the meetings are now scheduled to get more input from the drivers. And well, hello, thank you. I mean, who better than to get involved at this point than the 20 guys that are out there driving those cars and know what it's like and are the professionals. I mean, nothing from that they get taken away from the technical people and the engineers and the aerodynamicists that design and build these cars, but let's get some feedback from the drivers, the guys that are out there going at it wheel to wheel every other weekend over the course of 8 or 9 months, whatever the length of a Formula One season is. Let's get their feedback and see what suggestions that they have, because not only is it concerning that I hear these comments that Lewis is making, but was it last week or the week before that Romain Grosjean was saying that that he felt doesn't feel very physically challenged, or I think he said that he felt more exhausted after a kart race than after a Formula One race. So where is the challenge? You know, there's something still not quite there in what Formula One is and where they need to go. And then I also thought that it was promising too that Michael Massey, who's one of the he's the Formula One race director, he said he's open to the idea of rewriting the racing rules for 2020 if the drivers and the teams think that it would be a good thing to do. And of course, this is more of the backlash or the fallout, I guess. Excuse me, you could say of the Sebastian Vettel incident, Stewart Gate, whatever. Are we going to call it Stewart Gate? We can call it that, I guess, I suppose. But the big incident with the 5 second time penalty that he received in Canada. And I mean, you know, regardless if Sebastian deserved that penalty or regardless if he didn't, it just looks bad for the sport that you have two cars battling and then the car that crosses the finish line first is not the one that's not the guy that goes up onto the top step of the podium that gets that big trophy. I get it. He was judged to have broken the rules and was penalized for it. But just publicly, optically, it does not look good, especially to the wider audience. I mean, for those of us that follow Formula One, maybe we might not agree it, especially if you're a fan of Ferrari, especially if you're a fan of Sebastian Vettel. You're not going to be very happy about that call at all, right? But to a certain extent, even if you don't agree with it, you might understand the process and the reasoning behind it. And obviously the rules and the way that Formula One is set up left the stewards very little room than what they had and what they could ultimately do in that situation. But like I say, I mean, it just does not look good for Formula One. So I do find it promising that Massey is saying he's open to that. But, you know, again, you're going to need, you know, all the teams to get on board with that and all these other things. It's not exactly an easy process, but I'm glad to hear that there are these discussions, that then the people are speaking up. And it's one thing for them to speak up and make their opinions and their feelings known on these different issues, but at some point there's got to be some movement somewhere. I mean, collectively, all the parties have to come together and try and do something for the betterment of the sport. Because if it keeps going, where is it going to be? Is it going to be the same? Is it going to become a completely sterile and boring sport? I mean, those criticisms are there already by some people. Or can they do something to increase the excitement, increase the quality of the racing, and let drivers race? I mean, I thought, honestly, it was a harsh penalty for Sebastian Vettel, but... You know, I said before, I'd like to see the two guys race, but unfortunately, just the way that the rules are and the way that he came back onto the track, he was judged to have been given he had gained an unfair advantage. And because of that, you know, you get penalized for it. I mean, it seems harsh, but it's just the way it is. So I certainly hope that collectively Formula One can do the right thing. I really hope that. I'm a little bit cynical and skeptical that they won't be. But hey, I really hope that they will get it right. And I'm crossing my fingers that it will be the right outcome in the long run. Anyways, just a couple more things before we go. Alfa Romeo is planning a big series of upgrades for the British Grand Prix in a couple of weeks. Like I say, I think it was good to see Kimi Raikkonen finish where he did in France in seventh position. And then you look at Haas on the other side. And Romain Grosjean said that the French Grand Prix last week was their worst weekend in Formula One since they joined a couple of years ago. And it was just terrible. I mean, if you're Kevin Magnussen, you're finishing in front of the two Williams, you basically finish last. I mean, finishing in front of the Williams is nothing to be good about or feel good about, because they are the two slowest and the two worst cars on the grid. So, you know, if they're the only two cars behind you, you've got to be pretty concerned with what's going on. But just talking with Williams now, they announced earlier this week that Paddy Lowe has finally left the team. So he's now the former chief technical officer, and he's also left the board of directors. So he has been on leave for what they are calling personal reasons since the beginning of March, since just before the start of the season. And the only time the last time he was seen in public with the team was at preseason in Barcelona. And that was just a shambles. I mean, they delayed their departure to go to Barcelona for the initial first test, because they never really disclosed why, but they got there late. The car was slow, and this is the second car that he's been at the. Well, basically at the top. I mean, he is the chief technical officer. He was brought over from Mercedes a couple of years ago. And, well, you think that, you know, you've been with Mercedes, you've been with a team that's won a couple of world championships, both for the drivers and constructors. You got to think that's a guy that you want to have in your team. But, I mean, it's been pretty much an unmitigated disaster for Williams since he went there. I mean, they were bad last year in 2018 with the FW41, and then this year with the FW42. It's just as bad. And I mean, they are just seconds off of the pace. I mean, multiple seconds. I mean, it is just ridiculous. And again, if you look at not even the bigger picture of where they've been over, say, the last decade, I mean, just how far they have fallen just in the past couple of years is absolutely quite shocking. So, I mean, the cars that have been designed under the guidance on Paddy's watch, I mean, have just been wrong. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they have just been completely out to lunch with their philosophy. I mean, for lack of a better description. I mean, I hate to be cruel and put it that way, but when you're that far off of the pace, I mean, the car's just wrong. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, when you're even that much slower than the next slowest car in front of you, there is a really, really big thing. So you know, hopefully they can get that sorted out. I mean, Sir Patrick Head, who was the chief technical officer there for a long, long time, and oversaw the many of the glory years there as consulting on a part time basis, and he gets involved several days a week and is there to help advise and do what he can to help the team. So. We will see. Hopefully next year they get it turned around. But I mean, certainly they have had two disastrous years in 2018 and not even halfway through 2019 so far. But it's going to take them a very, very long time, I think, to dig themselves out of that hole. And very much like McLaren, it's just a sad place to see them. Anyways, let's just start wrapping it up now. Let's just quickly look at the Austrian Grand Prix this weekend at the Red Bull Ring. It is a 71-lap race. The circuit length is just over 4.3 kilometers in length for a total race distance of 306.45 kilometers. The lap record is held under... starting to trip up here. It's been a long day. The lap record is held by none other than the Iceman, Kimi Raikkonen, who set a time last year in 2018 of 1 minute 6 seconds, 0.957. And the three tire compounds that will be brought there by Pirelli are the hard C2s, medium C3s, and the soft C4s. And the last three winners of the Austrian Grand Prix were Max Verstappen, Valtteri Bottas, and Lewis Hamilton. And before that, in 2014, which was the, 2014 was the first time that the Austrian Grand Prix was rerun after about a decade or dozen years absence, and those pair of races were won by Nico Rosberg. So it's been all Mercedes 4 out of the last 5 years, and certainly considering it's been all Mercedes so far this year, it really it really doesn't look like it's going to be any different. Last year, Max Verstappen finished first, like I said, ahead of Kimi Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel for the Ferrari. Roman Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen finished 4th and 5th in 2018 at the Austrian Grand Prix for Haas, and considering how they've really been wallowing about and regressing and dropping through the race order in the past couple of races, seems very unlikely that they're going to be up there in 4th and 5th this weekend. And then in 6th and 7th last year was Esteban Ocon and Sergio Perez for the Force Indias, and then rounding out the top 10 was Fernando Alonso in the McLaren, Charles Leclerc for then the Sauber, and Marcus Ericsson, remember him, Charles Leclerc's other driving partner in the other Sauber last year. He finished in 10th position. Anyways, that is it for the show this week. Thank you so very much to listening to Scuderia F1. And if you want to get in touch with us, do so on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod, or send me an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. Going to be a couple more weeks, and then Kevin's going to come back, and then I'm going to take a couple of weeks off for the summer break. And before then, we do have a couple more races to go. Looking forward to the Austrian Grand Prix. You know, it's almost already Thursday morning here on the west coast of North America. It's already Thursday everywhere else in the world. I know we're a little bit slow, but whatever. So that means that we have free practice and qualifying and all that good stuff coming up over the next couple of days, culminating, of course, with the Grand Prix on Sunday afternoon. So I hope you all enjoy it. And of course, we will be back this time next week to talk about Austria and everything else that's going on around in the F1 world, and I can't wait. And until then, thank you for listening. Enjoy the race this weekend, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to scuderiaf1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com.